Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Anna Mateo, Alice Bryant, and Phil Dierking. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Sweden, home of the Nobel Prize, is facing political problems. The two main political alliances failed to win a clear governing majority in elections on Sunday. The ruling coalition, representing the Social Democrats, Greens, and the Left Party, won the most votes. The opposition center-right alliance finished in second place. Each side received a little more than 40% of the vote. The Sweden Democrats, a party with ties to white extremists, finished in third place. It won 17.6% of the votes. That was up from 13% in the 2014 elections. The Sweden Democrats gained because of voters' concerns about the hundreds of thousands of immigrants who moved to the country in recent years. The party wants Sweden to leave the European Union. The Sweden Democrats have been working to change the party's image as a movement working in support of Nazi policies. The Nazi Party ruled Germany in the years leading up to and including World War II. After the vote on Sunday, Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven has said he will stay in his position. His party, the Social Democrats, won the largest number of votes. Löfven has led the government since 2014. I'm Susan Chan.
It is back to school time in much of the world. Calm, easy mornings are replaced with busy, hurried ones. Children wake up early and get ready for school. Many parents are also getting ready for work, helping their children, and preparing food for lunches. But don't forget about breakfast. When things get wildly busy in the morning, some people skip breakfast to save time. But that may be a big mistake for students. Whether at home, on the way to school, or at school, eating something healthy for breakfast may help a student get better grades. That is the finding of a 2015 study from Cardiff University in Wales. Researchers there looked at 5,000 9 to 11-year-olds from more than 100 primary schools in the UK. They looked at what the students ate for breakfast, and then their grades 6 to 18 months later. They found that the students who ate a healthy breakfast were twice as likely to perform above average in educational activities. The researchers also found that unhealthy breakfasts, such as potato chips or a donut, did not appear helpful to educational performance. In 2013, an organization in the United States also looked at possible connections between breakfast and student success in school. The Share Our Strengths campaign, No Kid Hungry, found that on average, students who ate breakfast provided by their school attended 1.5 more days of school per year. These students also scored 17.5% higher on standardized math tests. But are there really that many children who do not eat breakfast? The answer is yes. Experts at HealthyChildren.org say that in the United States, about 8 to 12% of all students in grade school, kindergarten through eighth grade, do not eat breakfast. By the time students are in high school, grades 9 through 12, 20 to 30% of them ignore the morning meal. In Canada, researchers at the University of Waterloo looked at the eating habits of 42,000 students during the 2014-15 school year. The students represented 87 grade schools in Alberta and Ontario. The study found that 39% of students reported eating breakfast fewer than 3 days in the usual school week. What is a healthy breakfast? Health experts suggest that the best breakfast is a mix of complex carbohydrates, protein, and fat. This gives your body the energy it needs to think clearly and to remember what it learns. This was the 2005 finding of researchers at Tufts University in the U.S. They found that when it comes to giving the brain what it needs to work at its highest level, not all breakfasts are created equal. In their report, they explain that the brain needs glucose to work well. The best breakfast should include complex carbohydrates that slowly release energy to the body. Whole rolled oats, whole grain bread, or low-sugar granola are examples. But the report explains, simply eating a breakfast rich in carbohydrates may make a student tired. So adding protein helps to prevent that. Having a protein such as milk, yogurt, eggs, or meat can help students to feel full longer. Oatmeal, the researchers say, is an example of a breakfast that is rich in fiber and protein. It releases energy slowly because it is a whole grain food. So students will feel full longer. I'm Anna Mateo.
Last month, Oklahoma education officials approved plans to open a charter school to serve American Indian students. A charter school is established by a legal agreement, is operated by parents and teachers, uses public tax money, but is not linked to local schools. The approval came from Oklahoma's State Board of Education. The group's decision came a few months after the Oklahoma City Public Schools Board denied the plan. The goal of the Sovereign Community School is to serve American Indian students from different tribes in the Oklahoma City area.
Phil Gover is the founding director of the Sovereign Schools Project. He led the effort to start the Sovereign Community School. Gover has been working to create the school for about 18 months. but he said the process first began about 10 years ago when he visited an American Indian charter school in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The school is called the Native American Community Academy, or NACA. 8 years later, Gover received financing to create schools based on the model of the NACA school he had visited. This took place while he was working in Oklahoma City for the organization Teach for America. Later, he joined the Tribal Education Department National Assembly, or TEDNA, and started the Sovereign Schools Project. Gover said that TEDNA is developing 3 school projects right now, but the Sovereign Community School in Oklahoma City is his personal project. The path to approval was not always easy, he said. The Oklahoma City Public School Board denied the first application for the school. Gover appealed the decision. His appeal also was denied. Under Oklahoma law, Gover's group had the right to appeal the decision to the State Board of Education. They did appeal and later received approval for the school. Gover said that the school will serve as a safe haven for American Indian students and families who wish to stay connected to their culture. There are a lot of issues that Native students experience in cities as on reservations, Gover said. But the difference is that in cities, they don't have access to services from their tribal governments and don't have the same access to our culture. Gover understands these issues well. He grew up on Indian lands, known as reservations, in Nevada, but later left and has lived in cities ever since. If we are on reservations and in a federally run school system, our culture is with us, Gover said. We're immersed in our people. When you're an urban native, you don't have any of that. Your issues are invisible, you're invisible, your culture is invisible. Gover added that many American Indian communities in Oklahoma are too small to get a lot of attention from city governments or public school districts. We don't have a lot of political power, he said. National studies often find that American Indian students do not perform as well academically as other groups. This also is true within the federal government's Bureau of Indian Education school system. But some studies have also found that American Indian students in Oklahoma's public school system perform well. This is especially the case when they are compared to students in other states.
Gover said there are not a lot of resources for schools targeting American Indian students. This means the Sovereign Community School team will have to develop or adapt many of their own over the next year. Gover said his group will take a curriculum from the College Board called Springboard ELA and adapt it to be more culturally relevant to American Indian students and their experiences. They will have to go through a similar process with mathematics and science. However, Gover said his group will have to develop some resources themselves. One course Gover wants to create is a language program that teaches Native students from any tribe the histories of their tribal languages and their relationship to English. Along with Gover, the team developing the school curriculum will include local Native professors.
Oklahoma City school officials have had some concerns about the project. During the application process, some schools said that having a charter school only for American Indians seemed like segregation. Gover rejected that criticism. He said that having a choice to go to a school is not segregation. He added that critics should consider what it means to have an American Indian identity in the United States. To have a Native identity, especially in Oklahoma, is to be white sometimes, to be black sometimes, to be Hispanic sometimes. I think if you look at our students on the first day of school and take their picture, we're going to look like the most diverse school in the city, Gover said. The Sovereign Community School plans to launch next year with 150 students in the 6th grade to the 9th grade level. They plan to add a new 6th and 9th grade class each year until they have a full group of middle school and high school classes with about 500 students. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
America at its best matches a commitment to principle with a concern for civility.
Bush, the Republican nominee, defeated Vice President Al Gore, the Democratic candidate, in the presidential election of 2000. A dispute over the ballot count in Florida delayed the declaration of a winner and only added to political divisions in the country. The results in Florida were extremely close. 5 weeks passed as courts considered the issues. Finally, a conservative majority on the United States Supreme Court settled the matter. George Bush was to be president. Bush gave his inaugural speech on January 20th, 2001.
With a simple oath, we affirm old traditions and make new beginnings. As I begin, I thank President Clinton for his service to our nation. And I thank Vice President Gore for a contest conducted with spirit and ended with grace.
The new president spoke of American ideals.
The grandest of these ideals is an unfolding American promise that everyone belongs, that everyone deserves a chance, that no insignificant person was ever born.
And he called on Americans to care for and respect each other.
Today we affirm a new commitment to live out our nation's promise through civility, courage, compassion, and character. America at its best matches a commitment to principle with a concern for civility. A civil society demands from each of us goodwill and respect, fair dealing, and forgiveness.
Soon after his inauguration, President Bush established the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. The goal was to fight problems like homelessness and drug abuse with the help of social agencies connected to religious groups. Critics argued that this could violate the separation of religion and government under the United States Constitution. But the president said the agencies would provide shelter and food, not Bibles. President Bush took several actions on the environment during his first term, two of which brought strong protests from environmentalists. In March 2001, he made the decision to reject the Kyoto Protocol. That international treaty sought reductions in the release of carbon dioxide and other industrial gases blamed for trapping heat in the atmosphere. Negotiators approved the treaty in Kyoto, Japan, at the end of 1997 to show their concern about climate change. Vice President Gore later signed the Kyoto Protocol for the United States. But President Bill Clinton never sent it to the Senate for its required approval. The treaty faced enough opposition in the Senate that it might have been defeated. President Bush decided to unsign the treaty. He said he did not want to put the United States at a competitive disadvantage with big developing countries like China and India. Those countries would not have been required to cut the large amounts of greenhouse gases they were producing. Bush said the agreement was unfair and would harm American industry at a time when the economy was weakening. Critics said the president's decision would harm the environment and set a bad example for the world. Another environmental issue concerned exploring for oil and natural gas. The president supported a measure to allow drilling in a wildlife refuge in the state of Alaska. He said doing so would reduce American dependence on foreign oil. Opponents argued that it would destroy wildlife in some of America's most beautiful natural surroundings. In the end, the environmentalists won. Congress did not approve the drilling.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule.
One of President Bush's major domestic goals was improving America's public education system.
Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring, goes the bell.
In January 2002, he signed legislation passed by Congress called the No Child Left Behind Act.
We owe the children of America a good education, and today begins a new era. A new time in public education in our country. As of this hour, America's schools will be on a new path of reform and a new path of results.
The law increased the role of the federal government in an area where Americans have traditionally defended local control, public education. No Child Left Behind had several goals. To help poor and minority students improve their performance, to provide choices for parents with students in low-performing schools, and to increase money for schools in low-income areas. The law required all students in grades 3 through 8 to be tested every year in reading and math. It held schools responsible for showing that all students were making progress based on standards chosen by the states themselves. No Child Left Behind had many supporters, but critics said the expectations were unreasonable and that teachers might just teach to the test. Another major piece of legislation dealt with health care for older Americans. President Bush wanted to extend Medicare, the nation's health insurance program, for people 65 and older.
For nearly four decades, Medicare has been the binding commitment of a caring society. We must renew that commitment by providing our seniors with the preventative care and new medicines that are transforming health care in our country. We must protect seniors from high medical costs that can rob them of their savings. And we must place patients and their doctors at the center of every health care decision. My goal is to give seniors more choices and better benefits under Medicare, including a long-awaited prescription drug benefit.
In 2003, He signed a law to help 40 million older Americans pay for their medicine. On another issue, he banned federal funding for research on any new stem cells taken from human embryos. But he agreed to allow the first federal spending on research on existing lines of embryonic stem cells. Such cells interest some medical researchers because they can grow into different kinds of cells. But opponents object, for moral and religious reasons, to destroying embryos for the purpose of harvesting stem cells. George Bush promised to cut taxes for Americans. In 2001, he signed a bill passed by Congress calling for more than $1 trillion in tax reductions over time. The president said the economy would improve if people had more money to spend. In 2003, Congress passed $350 billion in additional tax reductions. That was less than half of what the president had proposed. In 2002, President Bush signed a law that increased punishments for financial dishonesty by companies. The new law also established an independent group to oversee the accounting industry. The action came after several major companies failed, including, in 2001, Enron.
I've got money wherever I go. I see money.
Enron had grown into America's leading energy company.
In the canyons of downtown Houston, home to the country's energy giants, a sense of gloom surrounds this one. Only months ago, it was the mightiest of them all. Now Enron answers the phone with this recorded message.
On December 2nd, Enron filed under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code, thus commencing proceedings to stabilize our financial situation.
It was at that time the largest bankruptcy in American history. 10,000 people lost their jobs. Some Enron investors lost all their money in the failure. Former employees lost the retirement benefits they needed to live on. Some top Enron officials were found to have used dishonest accounting methods to hide financial problems from investors. Enron's troubles also involved two large banks, Chase and Citigroup, and a big financial company, Merrill Lynch.
Enron couldn't have engaged in the deceptions it did without the help from a major financial institution. Merrill Lynch assisted Enron in cooking its books by pretending to purchase an existing Enron asset when it was really engaged in a loan.
Senator Carl Levin led a hearing into accounting and consulting practices and how they benefited Enron. Those actions included inflating the value of the company's stock. The collapse of Enron was followed by a series of other corporate failures linked to dishonest accounting methods. November 2, 2004 was Election Day. 4 years earlier, George W. Bush had been elected in one of the closest races in American history. Now he would have another chance to test his popularity with the American people.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.